ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It is a Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Be back behind the glass. We're about to get hammered. We're about to get pounded by this storm that's coming in.
Yeah, Lisa's been talking about it all morning, and the station's been on red alert getting ready for it. But they said the window is between now and 5 p.m., and it could get, like, torrential with the amount of rain that we might
have. Yeah, not feeling great about my 5:30 Southwest flight to Orlando.
Oh, it's not the team. I thought you were flying with the team.
No, I couldn't because I have to do the show. I'm committed to the excellence of the Killer Bees.
That's exactly why you have a job and Brendan no longer works here.
Yeah, he got fired. He got fired and went upwards to he announced it yesterday.
I saw that.
Brendan, if you have not heard.
Time. God, I almost got, like, caught crap about three times because of the freaking, you know, announcement that we knew that wasn't announced.
Yeah. Yeah. So Brendan, we fired him and he got a job in Chicago. So Brendan announced that yesterday. In case you don't follow him on Twitter, which why would you?
Right.
Why would you follow Brendan
Bad
on Twitter?
Bad food takes and, yeah, and occasional radio info.
Exactly. Yeah. And now he's going to be running the White Sox broadcast. So why would you follow Brendan on Twitter? I don't understand. But we appreciate what he did.
Yep.
Until the day that we fired him. But he's the Texans are also looking for a new head coach. We know this. Couple of new candidates, or I shouldn't say new candidates, a couple of candidates that are interviewing for the second time now.
They've advanced to the second round.
These are going to be in person. So the Texans have graduated from the Zooms to the in-person interviews. Mm. We know that the first one's going to be Mike Kaka from the New York Giants. The offensive coordinator Kaka is going to interview with the Houston Texans.
I would hope he doesn't turn into be Kaka. I hope he's Kafka.
And then Ejiro Evero is going to interview in person as well for the Houston Texans. Quite honestly, Blankers,
did he not the first time?
What's that?
Evero did not. I thought, didn't Evero fly?
Oh, that was Thomas Brown.
That was Thomas Brown.
Okay. That was the other one.
That's not.
I'm just saying. Hey, you confused Evero and Brown.
No, I didn't, because they met with D'Amico, too.
You did confuse Evero and Brown. Use that then Evero.
Oh, those two. Yeah, yeah. But I'm just saying.
Thomas Brown.
But when you said that is the other one, no, because there's been several.
Anyways, Thomas Brown was the one that flew into Houston. Thomas Brown's also interviewing for offensive coordinator jobs, so it seems like the head coaching position for Thomas Brown is not going to happen. I'd be shocked if either one of these two guys are actually the head coach of the Texans as well, because I think that right now it's probably a two-horse race, D'Amico Ryans, Jonathan Gannon. You might be able to throw Shane Steichen into that conversation. You could probably throw Mike Kafka into that conversation. I'd be stunned if it's Ejiro Evero. But looking at the way that the Texans are handling this, I believe Kafka's on Wednesday and then Evero's on Thursday. I think that the Houston Texans here are just trying to be active what would normally be an idle week, because they can't interview D'Amico, Gannon, or Steichen until next Monday because they're still in the postseason.
Right.
NFL rules prohibit them from meeting them again until Monday, a week from yesterday. So since the Texans can't interview what I consider their top three targets, and I would say that there's top two, D'Amico, Gannon, maybe a drop-off Steichen, then Kafka, and then a huge drop-off, in my opinion, to Evero, who's going to come into Houston on Thursday, I believe that the Texans just don't want to waste a week. Like, okay, we can't interview our top three candidates until Monday. We don't want to sit here and, you know, twiddle our thumbs all week, so why don't we bring in Kafka just in case? Do your due diligence. Bring in Evero just in case. Do your due diligence. And also, like, it kind of preps you for the big interviews that are going to come next week whenever you hopefully bring D'Amico into town. Maybe Gannon, maybe Steichen, bring them into town. It's good from a prep point of view. I think that the Texans aren't doing anything more here than their due diligence. They're kind of courting Kafka and Evero, but as back burners is, like, you know, just the emergency in case one of your top targets does not take this job.
I also think, Jeremy, the same way that we say that a lot of these coaches, whether they know they're a leading candidate or not, they take these interviews. They want the reps. They want the experience. They want to go through the process so they become familiarized with the process. I think from a Texans perspective, there's nothing wrong with saying the same way that we were going to interview as many candidates, and I suggested they interview as many candidates, but they interviewed a very high number of candidates in this opening round. But before you get down to brass tacks with the guys that you truly want to zero in on, there's nothing wrong with, you know, picking up an airline and a dinner tab, mm-hmm, and having a couple extra guys start the process off so that you kind of get the scrape the cobwebs off, and you do some things. Keep Cal out of the mix. You know, keep him in high. You know, from just let them say hi and bye, and I got this when the check comes. But you know, work on the kind of things so that when you do want to dial down and impress the guys you truly are after, that you're ready for.
What do you think is the like house? I do think that Kaká is a serious candidate for the Houston Texans. I really do. Kaká, because I speak Spanish and I know what Kaká means. But
there's an F in there.
In his name, yeah. But I'm calling him Kaká.
Okay.
Offensive coordinator for the New York Giants.
Not a compliment.
It's not. Okay. I wasn't suggesting that it was a compliment for Kaká, who had the 18th best offense in the NFL this year, and we're not even sure if he was the brains behind the offense.
I mean, that's my
genius there in New York.
It's like osmosis. Are you hoping that all these guys that really, you know, didn't put up all those numbers, or just because they worked with the guy?
Yeah.
Are you hoping that they just absorb it all and it like sinks in?
Yeah, maybe. Look, I think that like Big C, I put it on Twitter, my take on this, that the Texans are trying to stay, you know, active, not be idle this week because they can't meet with their top candidates. And I do think Kafka is a serious candidate. And Big C came at me on Twitter. Well, he didn't come at me. We were just having a conversation. He's like, why would you hire the guy who doesn't even have like an above average offense in the NFL? To Kafka's credit. And well, we don't know if he's the offensive mastermind. We know he was calling plays for the Giants, but they do have Brian Daboll as an offensive head coach. Nonetheless, the Giants went from the second to worst offense last year. Who was the worst? The Texans. The Giants went from the second to worst offense last year to the 18th offense this year. And they did it without really any huge additions. Now, Saquon Barkley was an addition because he was hurt in 21, wasn't hurt in 22. But I can make the case from a skill position player that Saquon Barkley's the only position player that they have, skill position player that they have, that is above average relative to the NFL. I think Daniel Jones is right on the cusp of top 16 quarterback. None of their receivers are in the top half of skill position players relative to the NFL. I think the Giants did a pretty good job with a lack of talent on the offensive side to have the 18th best offense in the NFL.
Well, look at the most expensive salary you have at the wide receiver position in Galladay was a guy that until the last 3 weeks of the regular season didn't see a football thrown his way. And they kind of worked him in a little bit, and basically he was an afterthought in the playoffs, and yet you still found a way to find guys to catch the football and do the things you needed to do. So, look, there's some positives there, and I really believe that if you're around Brian Daboll for any amount of time, you're going to be a better coach and because of it. The dude knows what he's doing, and whether you just say that you want to specify it to offense or just in a leadership role, the way he kind of got those guys to come together and stay loyal to him and the way he led them all season long, it was impressive.
Yeah, I think that Kafka, yes, they had the 18th offense in the NFL total yards this year, but they improved from 31. I'm curious, Todd, the show, who's a Giants fan,
yes,
what he thinks of Kafka. 713-780-ESPN.
Hopefully it's not the same as Eagles fans think of Jonathan Gannon.
I know. They hate Gannon. Now, Sirianni loves Jonathan Gannon. Maybe he's trying to sell Jonathan Gannon to the fact of, like, somebody hire this guy. I don't know if I want him back as my defensive coordinator. Todd says the Giants had a team of backup wide receivers, but I don't know how much you put it on Kafka or Daboll. That's my concern with these two offensive guys. Am I wrong to think that the final four for the Houston Texans are two defensive guys, D'Amico Gannon, and then two offensive guys, Steichen and Kafka? The worry with the two offensive guys, all four of these guys have worries, and maybe I'm underselling Ejiro Evero, who's going to get his second interview, an in-person interview, coming up on Thursday. Maybe I should take him more seriously as a candidate. Maybe I should. Maybe I'm selling him short. All four have worries, right? Jonathan Gannon, okay. Eagles fans hate Jonathan Gannon. They want him out of Philadelphia, even though they have the best team in the NFC. D'Amico Ryans, we know he's the brains behind the defensive operation, but he also inherited a defense that was already very good, and they have a very good roster on that side of the football. Steichen and Kafka, I think the concerns are the exact same. There are offensive coordinators that call plays with an offensive head coach. Sirianni in Philly and Daboll in New York. So those, they're all concerning. But how seriously do you take Kafka's candidacy with the Houston Texans?
I don't take it very seriously. Again, I say it's more for reps. It's more to get the intel, and also maybe he says something that kind of you weren't aware of that might give you some more things to think about. But I don't think he's definitely their main focus or one of the two main focuses. I think we both agree it's probably Gannon and D'Amico. So, you know, I think that from the standpoint of it's intriguing, and you want to know how much he did learn and what he does know from Daboll, but I don't think other than that they're thinking too seriously about him.
I think that he's probably fourth on their list. I think that they look at all three coordinators in Sunday's game in the NFC Championship higher than Kafka. And I'm guessing, obviously. But I think that they look at DeMeco higher and Jonathan Gannon higher. In fact, in my plums, I feel it's going to come down to one of those two guys. I think it's either going to be DeMeco. Of course I do. I think it's going to either be DeMeco or Gannon. But they're, you know, Steichen and Kafka, I think, that are kind of their back burners just in case they get turned down for the job or blown away by one of them. Do you think that Kafka's more likely or Evero is more likely?
Kafka.
Are you just saying that because that's what you want?
Offensive-minded coach.
But it is what you want.
Yeah.
Like, it is what you want. But I'm asking you from the Texans' thought. Like, should we be taking Evero seriously? Because, look, I think anybody who gets a second interview has a chance to land the job. Why else are they taking a second interview? And Evero, quite frankly, is taking a second interview on Thursday. I think at this point, like, it seems from a Texans' point of view that Kafka and Evero are, like, right there on the same, you know, rung of the ladder to get this potential Texans head coaching job.
I think it's quite possible. I just think that they'll make the exception with DeMeco because it's too good of a fit across the board. It's a guy that's been here and done that, that was good for the city. The city really likes him. He left a really good impact as a player, as a leader. You hear the J.J. Watt comments about from his rookie season about, you know, just living where DeMeco lived and following him in his rookie year because DeMeco was such a leader. And throughout his career, you know, on the field, all his other the players in the locker room called him coach. Those are the kind of things you want to hear. And so I think that elevates him and changes the direction, even if you were thinking offense. There's just too many good things to pass up on with DeMeco. He comes from the system of a guy, you know, that really everybody believes is the genius of the NFL offensively. As well in Shanahan. So, look, I think it's DeMeco elevated, and then the other defensive coordinators, I think, although they do know a lot about Gannon, I think that they get pushed down.
Dan Duggan, Hacksaw Dan Duggan, covers the New York Football Giants for The Athletic. He's going to join us at 1 o'clock to discuss Mike Kafka's prowess. Also, the legend, the wizard of the NFL, Howard Balzer, is going to join us at 1:30. I want to talk about Kafka. Like, how much are you giving credit to the Giants' 18th-ranked offense in the NFL to Mike Kafka? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Eric, the driver, says storm is currently pounding us up here in Conroe. Being a driver is no fun right now. Just be safe, Eric, the driver. I'm about to get pounded by the storm. I don't think I'm going to get out of here until like 9 o'clock tonight. Is that a fair guess? Over under my flight.
Especially since the airline that you are traveling on does not have a stellar reputation.
Exactly. Over under my flight. 713-780-3776.
What time is it supposed to take off? 5:30?
5:30 is my current flight.
8:45.
Oh, man.
And how long is the flight?
It's only like 2 hours.
Okay.
It's not very far. And plus, you have the jet stream or whatever. So it's only like it's a little bit over 2 hours. 2 hours and change. It's 2.5 on the way back.
I should probably go.
I'll go 9:15.
9:15?
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm rooting for the Jeremy
Payne. You guys
Payne.
Are cruel. Why would you wish this on me?
You're asking us to be realistic, not like wish hateful things on you. We're just trying to be realistic that it's Southwest Airlines first and foremost.
Things. That's facts.
Right?
That's facts.
And this storm is it looks like no matter how much weather people have a tendency to swing and miss, the radar doesn't lie to you. It looks like it's pretty bad.
I think it'll clear out by the time I'm supposed to fly, or at least right around that time, maybe like 6, but everything else is going to be pushed back. Like, that's the thing.
Yep.
Like, everything else is going to be grounded and pushed back. Texan Matt says 7 a.m. tomorrow. Don't think I haven't thought about that. I think that that's in play. I really do. I digress. Here I am just crying about myself. Blankers has a little bit. How would you describe it? I don't want to put words in your mouth. Blankers is going to leave us at 12:30.
I have a little bit of a family emergency. My daughter is sick. So
nothing
I'm going
too severe, though, right?
No, she's got a temperature and a headache.
You know how that goes.
I'm going to go
kids
play Mr. Mom. I'm going to rescue her, and then I'm going to connect, hopefully, from the house and finish with you guys.
So we're going to have a blank bridge coming up here in the next, which is my favorite bridge. I mean, I like all sorts of bridges, but the blank bridge is the absolute best. But no, in all seriousness, Blankers has to leave. You know how the fevers are in schools these days. So
got a fever.
Blankers
got
to go pick up a fevered kid.
And I don't need cowbell.
No cowbell. Let's get to some of this Kafka stuff before you go.
Yep.
Is this the offensive guy you want with the next quarterback? Let's assume that you have to go offense. Like, because, again, I think DeMeco or Gannon are the options for the Texans. I don't even think they're going to go offense. I think it's going to be DeMeco or Gannon. But if you do go offensive guy, which offensive guy do you prefer?
Steichen.
You prefer Steichen? Oh,
why? I do.
Why?
Because I saw more innovation. I saw a guy that adapted a lot of the offense. And, again, of course he could have help because he works for an offensive-minded head coach. But what I saw with the Eagles' offense in year two of Jalen Hurts and the progression of Jalen Hurts is they took advantage of his major strength, which is to run, which is a lot of the, you know, what you saw Baltimore do once they took Lamar Jackson. And when you look at what Philadelphia was able to do, they went from a more pro-style offense to an offense that still opened it up. And with the receivers that they had, especially this year, they were able to do a lot of things. But they didn't go away from the run. They actually kind of went to their strength and used it a little bit more. They used Jalen Hurts to get him in space. They, even with their running backs, they were, I like that they got a little bit more creative with their running game. So I like the fact from that perspective that you took advantage of your best player skill sets and you could still open up the offense a little bit more. Kafka, it's tough because, right, you're looking with Daniel Jones, and he can run a little bit, but, you know, there was a lot of people that thought at the start of the year, this was his last year in New York, and he, you know, had a good season and made a late push and was impressive enough that now the GM says they want him back. But, you know, that's a Saquon-driven offense, and they were able to still do some things in the passing game. But I like the fact that there was a little bit more innovation and creativity along with really focusing on the strengths of a Jalen Hurts.
I've been going back and forth on Kafka and Steichen, if I'm being honest. Like, they've been tied for third for me because we all know that my love for Benny Johnson was very, very high, and he was my, by far, top target, our top target by far. DeMeco's been my second guy all along, so I ultimately now hope that it is DeMeco Ryans. I've been going back and forth with Kafka or Steichen. I think that they're almost the same sort of positives and negatives when it comes to Kafka and Steichen. They're offensive coordinators. They call plays for their respective teams. Their offenses have gotten better with them as the OC, but they're behind a head coach who has an offensive mind, Daboll, and of course Nick Sirianni. Some people have pointed to the Steichen's role with the Chargers as I've seen some people twist it as a positive and some people twist it as a negative. Why did the Chargers ever let him go? Well, they got a new coach. Like, they brought in Brandon Staley. Whenever you bring in a new head coach, you're going to probably have turnover at the offensive coordinator position. So I don't look at Steichen's role with the Chargers being the OC for a single year and then he had to leave because somebody else came along as the head coach and he brought in an offensive coordinator that he wanted. I don't look at that as a negative for Shane Steichen. Now, I don't necessarily look at it as a positive that he, like, helped groom Justin Herbert. Like, to me, it's a nothing burger. I think there's some negatives. I think there's some positives. I think it's a net wash when it comes to those two. But I do give Steichen the slight edge. I think both of these guys have brought the best out of their offensive players, whether it's the Eagles with Jalen Hurts. Now, they've had some help with the receivers that they brought in. A.J. Brown, that's going to help a lot. Whereas the Giants, again, they went from 31st to 18th in the NFL in offense, and they had Saquon Barkley come back. They had nothing at wide receiver. And Daniel Jones was a quarterback that they even didn't pick up his fifth-year option, and they were able to maximize his potential. So I see some positives and negatives with both. There's also the part of the conversation of, like, we're sitting here talking about what they bring to the table as offensive coordinators. That doesn't always translate to the head coach position, because the head coach position and the offensive coordinator position can be very different, especially if you're not calling plays.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that, and we've kind of outlined this before as we've gone over each guy and gone over the characteristics of each guy. Look, I mean, I like the fact that, you know, Kafka was an ex-player, he's an ex-quarterback. Kafka, you know, seems to work well with Daboll, and that's a good sign when you've got a guy that's such an offensive mind. I don't know that from a Philadelphia perspective, Sirianni gets enough credit for being an offensive guy. I don't know that a lot of people realize that, but I think that you have to be, you know, you look at whichever quarterback that they take, there's going to be strengths and weaknesses. Now, you're going to have to protect a guy a lot more when you look at Bryce Young, and then you also want to look at, you know, the ability to run of a Stroud or the ability, you know, to do the things that you want to see out of a Levis. But again, a lot of it is more unknown. You got to work with them really closely. And the other thing is to be able to develop them, because we know what they could do well, but we also know where their shortcomings may lie. Now, how you develop the quarterback means as much as anything that you can do to kind of exploit their strengths. If you can't help to get them better and they're not progressing to get better, then you're going to have a situation like what happened with Baltimore after they redid the whole playbook for Lamar Jackson. Well, at a certain point, you still want to make sure he's progressing as a quarterback that can throw, but you're taking away his receivers. and you're not really working with him as much as you should on getting better in the pass game until there comes a point where there's a tipping point. You get, you're thinking about either blowing it up or starting over with your coaching staff. You don't want to take a young quarterback and have him have setbacks because you're not working with him and don't have the experience to work with a young quarterback to develop him. So, it, you know, one thing to capitalize on his strengths, almost as important as to develop the things that may be weaknesses.
Whenever you, like, I think a big part of going offense is to hire a dude who's going to, like, help groom the quarterback. I think that's just important as, like, calling plays offensively, because we don't know if either one of these guys is going to call plays, and that's probably why they're having these interviews. If you're looking at it from a grooming quarterback point of view, do you give that advantage to Steichen, or do you give that advantage to Kafka?
Well, I think more Steichen than I do Kafka, because Kafka, Daniel Jones been in the league a couple years, and, you know, he got hurt. But I think he had glimpses. He showed you glimpses in the past that he could actually grasp the position and play it. And everybody was saying Jalen Hurts, you know, should play another position. And they were questioning what Jalen Hurts could and couldn't do. And all of a sudden, breakout season, like MVP candidate, like does everything and does it well and continues to get better. That tells me that there was a lot of work put in. We know Jalen Hurts is a workaholic. We know he's in the weight room all the time. We know he's studying his playbook. But it takes the coaching staff that's working on the other things and developing the things that maybe are lacking a little bit to get him to a different level. He's at a different level now than he was, you know, his first year in the league and when he came in and took over the starting quarterback job.
It's tough because, I mean, both of them have made strides, right? Like, yeah. Jalen Hurts has made tremendous strides. Daniel Jones has made tremendous strides. That's why I like, between those two, if I have to go offense, they've been going back and forth with him. Like, because Steichen has way more help. Steichen has Devontae Smith. He has A.J. Brown. He has Jalen Hurts, who coming into this year, everybody thought of better than Daniel Jones, and he was better than Daniel Jones. He had an MVP season, whereas the Giants have nothing but Saquon Barkley. 713-780-ESPN. If you go offense, which offensive mind do you prefer, Kafka or Steichen? 713-780-3776. If Kafka gets the job, what does this say about the Houston Texans coaching search? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Joel's gone. Joel went to pick up a fevered child. We hope the best for his fevered child. But it does mean Blankers is gone. And when Blank is gone, maybe we can get away with some things, B-Mac?
I think there's a few things we can get into.
What are some things that we can get away with now that Blankers is no longer in the studio?
I mean, we could talk
30
professional
minutes or so.
Wrestling. He has no interest.
Yeah, John Cena did follow me today.
I saw that. That's big for you.
You saw that. He saw me. I saw him. Yeah, that's. I mean, he follows 525,000
yeah,
people.
I looked that up because there's a few people. I'm trying to remember I can't remember the guy's name now, but there was an outfielder for the Blue Jays, the guy that was involved in the huge bat flip when they played the Rangers.
Jose Bautista?
Jose Bautista, thank you. Anyway, he followed me a few years ago, and I was like, well, that's kind of random. And then I looked up his account, and he's following like 3 million people. So I was like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Chuck Knoblauch did that once upon a time. Chuck Knoblauch was like following everybody for whatever reason. I don't know if he was selling a book or something. I don't know, to get
it's
attention.
Possible.
But yeah, John Cena follows me.
You weren't the only
now.
Person. I saw a few other people tweet out, oh my God, John Cena just followed me. So I wonder if this is some sort of thing like that. I
no know doubt.
He doesn't have a book, but he is going to be in the cover of the next WWE video game. So maybe he's hoping to do something there.
More followers means more clout, means more money. So
yeah,
he's got
true.
He's got a team working on upping his follower count for whatever reason. 713-780-ESPN.
You're most proud of?
Probably not.
Who are you most proud of?
I mean,
does Joey Burrow follow you? I know you guys are soulmates.
We did lock eyes.
Yeah.
We did lock eyes. But I think that he was too guilty to follow me because it means that there was a connection there. He doesn't want to admit it.
I think your connection is so strong it goes beyond following each other on social media.
U of H coaches, Big E, Elvin Hayes follows me.
Well, I
Tillman,
would hope so.
Tillman does.
Okay, that's a pretty good one.
Tillman follows. He didn't follow many. I think it's like 350 or something like that.
Only 350.
Branham's one of the list.
That is a pretty good
one.
Yeah,
Branham's one of the lists. That's good. I think that's pretty good for me. 713-780-ESPN. What can we get away with now that Blankers is out of the studio? 713-780-3776. Juan in Denver, defense wins championships. Just saying. Still throwing shade on NFL defenses. Do they?
Say that, but I mean, obviously Sean McVay won the Super Bowl last year. I mean, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid won a Super Bowl a couple years ago. I think it's kind of basic just to say It's just a basic cliche that has been was one, probably once true in a different era of football, but I don't think it remains true at this point.
If you just let's look at the last few Super Bowl champions. The Los Angeles Rams had McVay as the head coach, offensive mind. They beat the Bengals, who had Zach Taylor as the head coach.
Yeah, so two offensive guys to that point.
Last year, you can go even further. Tampa Bay, whenever they won, they still had Arians, offensive head coach. They beat Andy Reid, offensive head coach. The Chiefs, three Super Bowls ago, beat the 49ers, Reid beating Shanahan, offense.
Yeah.
The last time, would you consider Belichick a defensive coach?
Yeah, of course.
So the last one that has won a Super Bowl as a head coach, the defensive head coach, was Bill Belichick back in the 2018 season. The last three Super Bowl champions have been offensive dudes, and the last three Super Bowl matchups have had six combined offensive head coaches.
You seem to have it in front of you, but I would assume if you took Belichick out, if you just remove Bill Belichick because he's a different breed of coach, over the last 20 years, I would guess the high percentage of non-Belichick Super Bowl winners are offensive guys.
And you also have to consider, too, that a lot of people say that Belichick won because of Brady, right?
Sure.
And some people call us, Gary always likes to call us and say, well, how many Super Bowls has Belichick won since Brady? He hadn't won one. So if we're going to give Belichick his flowers and his Super Bowl championships because of Brady, was defense winning your championships? I would argue that they were, because
especially
I think
the first three. Because like the first three out of 4 years, Brady was good,
right?
Obviously, but he wasn't the guy that he became when they won titles in 16 and 18.
And they had a top 10 defense every time that Brady won a championship in New England.
But
that
I would
matters.
Say the later ones, like 14, 16, 18, that was more Brady than defense.
All right,
I would say.
Let's get rid of Belichick. Like, he's an anomaly, right? So you go Eagles with Peterson, offensive guy. Then you have New England again with Belichick, so we're not allowing Belichick. And then Denver won it with Fox, right?
John Fox, he
was the head coach whenever Denver won it with Manning, wasn't he?
Yeah, I believe. No, it was Gary Kubiak.
Kubiak was the head coach. So Kubiak is an offensive head coach. We have to keep going further. Again, the Patriots don't matter. And you'd have to go all the way back to the 2013 season when Pete Carroll won it.
There you go.
When Pete Carroll won it in Seattle. So the whole defense winning championships, not quite.
Unless you're Bill Belichick.
Not quite. Yeah, unless you're Bill Belichick, it hasn't happened since the 2013 season. And if you want to look at who is left in the postseason, 49ers, Shanahan, Eagles, Sirianni, Bengals, Taylor, Chiefs, Andy Reid. The final four are all offensive-minded head coaches. So I don't think that we're I don't think we're being disrespectful to defenses. I think it's the way the NFL is going. And quite honestly, look at the last few Super Bowl champions. Look what's left in the NFL. Look at the direction of good teams in the NFL with good records. Most of them are offensive-minded head coaches.
Even go beyond the Final Four. I mean, the Eagles knocked out the Giants. Brian Daboll, offensive guy. The 49ers knocked out the Cowboys. Mike McCarthy, offensive guy. The Bengals knocked out the Bills. I mean, well, Sean McDermott, I guess, would be a defensive guy.
He'd be the one.
But even going further into the Final Eight, it's mostly offensive guys.
Yeah, Elite Eight, you would have one defensive guy. The only defensive guy would be McDermott, because now you have Peterson with the Jags, Daboll with the Giants, and then you have Mike McCarthy with the Cowboys. So McDermott was the only defensive-minded guy in the Elite Eight of the NFL. So I don't think that we're disregarding defense. I think we're telling you the truth about how defensive-minded head coaches currently have success in the NFL, which could speak to the Texans' job kind of going against the grain, right? If they're top two candidates, which I believe that they are, are you any different on that, B-Mac? I think it's either going to be D'Amico or Jonathan Gannon.
My first choice is D'Amico. I would go Steichen, too. I think we disagree there.
Okay. No. I don't. Now, Gannon's not on my number two wish list. I'm talking about what I think is likely to happen.
Then, yeah, I think it's D'Amico or Gannon.
Gannon's like fifth. Though Gannon's sixth on my current list.
Right.
He's behind the four. Well, Ben Johnson's gone, so I guess he'd be fifth. No, but I don't want Gannon.
Yeah,
I think
we're in agreement there. If it's my choice, it's D'Amico or Steichen, but if you're asking me what's more likely, it's D'Amico or Gannon.
Yeah, same. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener. So you like Steichen more than Kafka.
I do, because I give credit not only for what we've seen with Jalen Hurts, but I also have to remember that, and obviously he was dealing with a great amount of talent in this player, but he was helped develop Justin Herbert into basically, a great rookie right away and had a great season and has since arguably regressed since Steichen left and went to Philadelphia.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line.
Oh, he dropped, yeah.
Jeff, we were just about to get to you. We were about to get to you, Jeff, and you had to say goodbye. 713-780-ESPN.
He wanted to point out that the 49ers have the number one defense. That was his point.
It's a good point. It's a good point, because if I look at the 49ers, what's the strength of that 49er team? It's not offense. It's not Brock Purdy. The defense is number one in the NFL.
It is. But I still go back to the offense, because if they didn't have a guy like Kyle Shanahan, a wizard in offense, they wouldn't – like, let's say they had a defensive head coach. Do you have any faith that defensive head coach and that staff will be able to turn the third-string quarterback, Mr. Irrelevant, into somebody that could have gotten to the NFC Championship game?
None.
Right.
Absolutely
so
none.
They only get to this point because they have the offensive guy.
How many coaches in the NFL could get the most out of Mr. Irrelevant? Because Shanahan's obviously one. I think there's three.
Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, obviously.
Right. And then I would say Andy Reid. I would throw Andy Reid into that conversation as well. After that, maybe Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles.
Yep.
So I think that you might be able to include Peterson there.
Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence this offseason, people were having real debates about him being a worse quarterback than Davis Mills.
He only threw like 10 touchdowns as a rookie. Obviously,
terrible season.
The whole blame goes to Urban, but when you look at his numbers, he looked awful.
Yeah, I mean.
He looked as bad as Kenny Pickett did this year.
Which goes to show you how important it is to have that type of dude in your organization. That's the one fear that I have with DeMeco, if I'm being completely honest. I have the fear
revolving head door of offensive coordinators?
That, yes, to that, but also who's grooming the quarterback? Like, if you have you need to bring somebody in that's going to groom a quarterback. I think if you look around the entire NFL, that it's difficult for quarterbacks to have success without somebody showing them the ropes and actually getting the best out of them. Pat Mahomes was a 10th pick of the draft, and Andy Reid made him the best quarterback maybe of all time. Now, Joe Burrow was the first pick, but he had Zach Taylor, an offensive dude. Didn't really have a great rookie year. Then they bring in Ja'Marr Chase. I think situation matters a lot in the NFL. I think situation matters a lot for quarterback, and I think you have to have good pieces around you, including the dude that's the offensive coordinator or the dude grooming the quarterback. And DeMeco Ryans isn't going to do that. DeMeco Ryans isn't going to groom the quarterback. DeMeco Ryans isn't going to like bring the most out of whoever they draft at number two if they do go quarterback. It's why if you hire DeMeco, I don't hate if you go defensive player at number two, to be completely honest with you. But yes, to the point about a revolving door at OC, if you hit on the OC position and he makes Bryce Young, if he's the second pick, look like a top five quarterback, that dude's going to get hired because of what he did with the quarterback alone, and now you have the revolving door. So that is something that's pretty terrifying.
I think the hope, though, would be in the time that that guy is here, he's able to get Bryce Young or whoever the quarterback is to a point that he can still be successful under the next OC, because we pointed out the last defensive coach besides Belichick to win a Super Bowl, Pete Carroll, had Russell Wilson, sure. And they were still able to develop Russell Wilson, a third-round pick, someone that a lot of people didn't think was going to be a franchise quarterback, and develop that guy into arguably, a top-five quarterback of the last decade?
You know what would scare me is the Josh Allen. Like, do you think Josh Allen regressed this year? Some people think that he did.
I do.
Josh Allen all of a sudden lost Brian Daboll.
And we
pointed
out Justin Herbert has regressed a little bit since Shane Steichen left.
You think so?
A little bit. I mean, the yardage numbers, some of the turnovers. Maybe I'm speaking a little bit from a jaded point of view because I have him in fantasy.
Yeah.
And he kind of let me down the stretch. But I did feel like just from a statistical and of course he was missing Mike Williams and Keenan Allen a lot of the year. But I do think he took a little bit of a step back.
Like Pat Mahomes is, you're never going to have to worry about that with Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid.
No, he lost Tyreek Hill and he got even better.
Right. Like Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid, if you keep that pairing together, will always be Super Bowl contenders. I think that if you keep Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor together, that they will always be Super Bowl contenders. I think Kyle Shanahan and pick whatever quarterback in the world you want, they will always be Super Bowl contenders. DeMeco Ryans in the quarterback? Can we say that they're always going to be Super Bowl contenders, even if you hit on that quarterback?
There is a little more volatility year to year. I would concede to that point. I still do think it can be done with the Russell Wilson comparison to what Pete Carroll did, but I do think I would agree with the point that it could be more volatile than other situations if you had an offensive head coach.
Look, I'm saying I want DeMeco.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the biggest fear of DeMeco is all of a sudden you have franchise quarterback and you're having to figure it out every single year. And there's not a lot of quarterbacks that I think can do that. I think Pat Mahomes can do it now. I think Aaron Rodgers did that. Tom Brady proved he can do it because he went to Tampa Bay
right.
And got a W there.
The hope is that the offensive guy you bring in, if DeMeco's the head coach, is able to get Bryce Young or whoever the quarterback is, maybe it's C.J. Stroud, maybe it's Will Levis,
I'm out on Stroud.
I know you're out on him, but I'm just saying, I'm listing the hypotheticals.
Yeah.
That they can get to them to a point where they could be that quarterback that doesn't necessarily need the best offensive mind as his coordinator to get the most out of him.
713-780-ESPN. Does defense win championships? Is that an antiquated thought? Do you have to have offensive mind? How about that DeMeco fear? Because I think that DeMeco fear does exist. That you draft or you hire DeMeco, draft a quarterback. What's the plan? What's the offensive plan? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Also, we know the majority wants DeMeco Ryans. But if it's not D'Amico, would that be okay? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Not Santa says, so is the reason that Blank isn't on air yet is because he can't figure out the difference between a show with two guys based on the letter A and a show with two guys based on the letter B? Couldn't tell you that. I don't want to speak for Blank. 713, I don't mean Joel Blank. 713-780-ESPN. Joel had to take care of a sick daughter. I think everything's going to be all right. No, it's not all that severe. She just has a fever at school. You can't have a kid with a fever at school, so Joel had to go pick her up. So we wish him the best. Although, while the while he's away, B-Mac and I will play. 713-780-ESPN. We're just talking about the defense debate. Like, do you have to have... defense. Is that old saying, defense wins championships? Is that antiquated? Is that out to date?
I think we proved that that's definitely outdated.
Yeah, there's some counterpoints on the text line I want to get to, and LSU Brian's hanging out on the HRMP listener line that I want to get to as well. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to LSU Brian. LSU Brian, what's going on? You're in the Hive with the Killer Bee.
What's going on, guys? Hey, so my number one is Sean Payton. I'm almost certain that's not going to happen. I'm still not sure if I'm willing to get up the 12th for him, but, I mean, I don't think we got to worry about it anyway. So, with everyone else, I think D'Amico is your overall more complete head coach. All right, and he's defense. I want an offensive guy myself. But I believe your question was, can you win with defense, defensive-minded coach? And you absolutely can. I mean, we've seen, you know, some mediocre to decent quarterbacks. You don't have an elite – you don't have to have an elite quarterback to win the chip. But if you got a decent quarterback, you prove they've – all those teams pretty much had an elite
When was the last decent quarterback that's won a Super Bowl? I'll give you Nick Foles, but that seems like the anomaly. That seems like Doug Peterson had Carson Wentz playing at an MVP level. Nick Foles caught a hot hand in a hot stretch. Like, when has a mediocre quarterback won a Super Bowl?
We'll probably have to go back to, say, Baltimore with Flacco. Now, he had that one really good playoff run, but I mean, I get what you're saying. I mean, because it's a different league today.
You're breaking up a little bit. You broke up there a little bit, Brian. We're going to have to drop you.
To answer your question, I think you can, as long as he brings in the right quarterback, coach, and offensive-minded guy.
Yeah.
So that's my thought.
Appreciate the call, Brian. And look, there's more than one way to cook the egg. I'm playing the percentages here because you bring up two in the last decade where it did happen. Like, I can't just dismiss Nick Foles. Like, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. Like,
it
can't
happen. And even though it was an offensive head coach, you would argue, obviously, the Broncos won their last Super Bowl with defense because Peyton Manning was a shell of himself at that point.
Sure. They won that Super Bowl with defense.
They won it with Von Miller just
killing
Cam
Newton. And wounded ducks
that
Peyton Manning was throwing. There's no doubt about that. They didn't win because of Peyton Manning. You can't argue that. But, okay, there's three. Like, there's three in the last decade where Peyton Manning won his in 2015. If you want to say Joe Flacco in 2012, and you want to say Nick Foles whenever they won the Super Bowl in 2017 season. That's three quarterbacks in the last 11 years, because this year is going to be 22, and this year, unless Brock Purdy wins the Super Bowl, I think that you've had a really good quarterback. I wouldn't say a mediocre quarterback is winning the Super Bowl unless it's Brock Purdy that wins the Super Bowl. So that's three quarterbacks in the last 11 years that have been mediocre.
Yeah.
Give me the quarterback.
A lot of these things that people keep bringing up, especially with the defense, and obviously the popular one that people always love to bring up is Trent Dilfer. Oh, well, Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. Dealing with probably a top three defense of all time, of course, on the other side of the football. But
they like Trent Dilfer so much that they let him walk in free agency that offseason.
Yeah, and people also point out Brad Johnson, obviously, with Tampa Bay. But all these examples go back 20-plus years at this point. So it's just a different style of game. I don't think those things apply anymore.
And again, like, Brock Purdy in San Francisco could win the Super Bowl this year. Is Brock Purdy a Super Bowl, like, contender every single year? I don't think so.
I don't even think it's a lock that he would be back as their starter.
No, I think that they go into camp with Trey Lance and Purdy fighting for that job. Right. Now, if they win the Super Bowl, then yeah, Brock Purdy is going to be your starter on opening day. But if they lose this week by 3 touchdowns to Philadelphia, it's a camp battle. It's a camp battle between Trey Lance and Brock Purdy if he throws 3 picks in that game. I don't think they've given up on Trey Lance. You give up that much draft capital to move up to get Trey Lance?
Yeah,
you're not giving up on Trey Lance. Absolutely not. So can you win with a mediocre quarterback and a really strong defense? Yes, it's possible, but it's not probable. Like, no. Look at the last 15, 20 years. It would say the opposite, that you need that strong quarterback. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 6036 says the San Francisco defense is what keeps them in the game. I agree. He said, I'm not disagreeing with your point, but an offensive-minded coach with a solid defense can have a mid-range quarterback. Okay, fair. But if we're looking at this from a D'Amico Ryans point of view, can you have that defensive-minded head coach, whoever the quarterback is going to be, and then be a contender every single year? The last defensive coaches that have been contenders every single year is probably Bill Belichick with the Patriots, and that might be it. You might be able to throw Pete Carroll into the mix with Seattle.
Yeah, they did go to back-to-back Super Bowls.
And they had a really good run. They had a really good run with a really good defense, and they had Russell Wilson on a rookie contract.
You couldn't call Russell Wilson a mediocre quarterback either.
Not then. Yeah. Not then. Absolutely not. Like, I've had my beef with Russell Wilson a little bit. But not then. Not when he was at Seattle. Not when he was at his peak. He was absolutely a top 10 quarterback in the NFL.
I get a little annoyed by some of the kind of the people on the other side of this conversation, because they always like, kind of like we just said, that, you know, Trent Dilfer, Brad Johnson, they always like to bring up the 1% scenario and point out, well, it could be done this way. Uh-huh. Of course it could be done that way. It could be done 1,000 different ways. But what we're talking about is what gives you the most likely chance of success. And what we've seen in the what I would call modern football the last, you know, 15, 20 years, is the shortest path, the best odds are getting that top level quarterback and then building everything else around that. And especially going back to Russell Wilson, you can build that great defense like the Ravens had in the early part of the 2000s, obviously, like the Seahawks had with the Legion of Boom.
Seahawks is fine.
I said Seahawks. I did say Seahawks, didn't I? Oh, well. I'll take a shot at Richard Sherman if I can. But those situations rely upon having, like with Russell Wilson, a quarterback on a rookie contract. So obviously you could have that scenario with whoever the Texans draft here, but it's hard to keep a defense so dominant together around that long.
Yep.
The contracts just go up and it just doesn't really work out. And it only works out if the quarterback is on the rookie contract.
Yeah, Seattle all came apart. They couldn't pay everybody.
Exactly.
And then they had to pay Russell Wilson.
It's a shorter window, I think, of success when you're building that level of defense than it is, like what Joe Burrow said, the window here is as long as I'm around. That doesn't exist if you do it through the defense. That window is much, much shorter, because as soon as those guys get to the next contract, the whole thing blows up.
Even like Brady's going to be 45 this year. We thought that Tampa Bay was a Super Bowl contender at the start of the year. Aaron Rodgers is very old, very late in his career. We thought Green Bay was a Super Bowl contender this year. So the quarterback, like if you want to look at it from a window point of view, I think it's probably their second or third year in the NFL until almost the day that they retire. And like Peyton Manning stunk whenever he won a Super Bowl with Denver, but he won a Super Bowl with Denver. And even if you go back to your point, too, about how it's more difficult to keep a really strong defense together because there's a lot of dudes, a lot of guys that you have to pay that are going to want to get paid. What is something that Tom Brady has been praised for his entire career? Taking less money so the rest of the team could be better.
You don't know the quarterback you get is going to be willing to do the same thing.
Exactly. I mean, I wouldn't. Like, if I'm a quarterback and I'm top two, top three quarterback, and I think Pat Mahomes, quite frankly, did it. Now, he signed a long-term deal, and they've, you know, fudged the money to kind of game the system a little bit. I think Pat Mahomes, when it's all said and done, is going to make far less money than he could have. By maybe if he was money-happy and very greedy and wanted a lot of money, I think he could have went in a different avenue to maximize the amount of money that he was going to make over the course of his career. But Mahomes is going to be a contender always. Rodgers still a contender. We think that Brady's a contender, although I would start to push back on that this late in his career. Joe Burrow will always be a contender. 713-780-ESPN. 0901 says this, B-Mac. He says, Matthew Stafford is mediocre. Do we believe that Matthew Stafford is mediocre? We were having a conversation at the end of last season that Matthew Stafford has now put together a Hall of Fame resume.
No, he was not mediocre last year. And he had some mediocre years with Detroit, but so did a lot of people. It was the Detroit Lions.
Now, he threw a lot of picks. He threw a lot of interceptions. I don't think that Matthew Stafford is mediocre. I think Matthew Stafford Stafford over the majority of his career has been a top 10 quarterback, and it wouldn't shock me if he goes into the Hall of Fame, into Canton.
Matt Stafford's always been someone with elite tools, elite intangibles, but didn't have necessarily the coaching around him or the other talent, especially after Calvin Johnson retired, to fill in the rest of the pieces. You get with Sean McVay, you get with Cooper Kupp, and the rest of the pieces kind of fill around you, and you saw what we always saw, the elite-level talent finally come and be able to actually win a Super Bowl.
That's insulting to Matthew Stafford.
Yeah,
Matthew Stafford
is
not a mediocre
quarterback. Maybe he had some mediocre results because of the talent around him, the coaching, the situation he was in, but he is not a mediocre quarterback.
I think it'd be fair to say if you look at the last 10 years of quarterbacks, Matthew Stafford might not be in the top third of that list. But I'm not going to say Matthew Stafford is a mediocre quarterback. That's outrageous. 713-780-ESPN. Hacksaw Dan Duggan covers the New York Giants football beat for The Athletic. He's going to join us next as we have news that Mike Kafka is going to get an in-person interview with the Houston Texans. Learn a little bit about Mike Kafka next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.